We start our show tonight talking with Dr. Ed Landon about his model of climate change that predicts that climate-caused problems are actually underestimated as global warming will accelerate in the near future. Paleontology is the study of ancient life. Dr. Landon was a New York State paleontologist for over 30 years.
Dr. Landon, how did you get involved in paleontology?
These things are always difficult to answer. I think it's a matter of luck and mentoring. And of all things, the New York State Museum and the Milwaukee Museum. I was born in Milwaukee, grew up a little bit to the north, and we had relatives in this area. We'd come to this area, go to John Boyd Thatcher Park, and the interesting thing for a little kid was seeing marine fossils, marine animals in the rocks. And you're seeing something that proves to you that the Earth has really changed. And so I think I just went from archaeology, finding out that part of the past, to something to working with deep time. And I would say that something like the New York State Museum, which I visited as a kid while visiting this state, and it's Don Fisher, he was truly a mentor to a little kid.
So why is paleontology important to people?
Well, I think, early on, let's say the end of the 1700s, it was very important because engineers could recognize, well, this is probably an area where you would want to search for coal based on the types of fossils or different types of iron ore. This is still a reason for a lot of majors in the science. But really, paleo led a cultural change. You know, beginning in the 1800s, everyone is a creationist, but they're faced with a changing world. They're seeing that where they live was once covered by seas, that there is some succession of ancient life, and an idea of deep time was developing. It was still pretty much economic, but I think it really changes with Darwin. And Darwin's 1859 work meant that the rock record is showing something that wouldn't have been allowed by creation. It showed extinction of animals. It shows a succession of organisms and a deep time. And I think today it's particularly important because we're starting to understand how major extinctions took place in the past. We're seeing extinctions related to ice ages, meaning great habitat change, and times when there's an awful lot of carbon dioxide that is produced from volcanoes. And I think the other thing is that we're coming to understand the end of the Pleistocene and the loss of these great big charismatic animals as human-caused. And this is continuing today. We're having a lot of large animals that are going extinct, and so I think we see that humans are becoming a dominant biological organism on Earth.
Now, you used the expression deep time. Could you explain what that means? Does it mean simply more that the Earth is older than 6,000 years old?
Or? Well, this is really the case. I mean, they're starting to suspect something like this, certainly in the 1800s, and it's really only with someone like Marie Curie discovering radiation and the decay of radioactive elements that we start putting a real quantitative time scale onto anything. And really, when I look at paleo, I think the worst of paleo is the tagging and description of ancient life. That's collecting. That makes newspaper headlines, a great big new dinosaur from somewhere, but that strips out the science of the paleontology. And I found that as I got more and more into paleo, that it's important to reconstruct the ancient physical environment that critters were living in, the ecology of associated fossil things, like who produced what, who ate what, who cleaned up the debris. And what the State Museum, when I came there finally, allowed me to do was to do a lot of work in New York State and internationally, a lot of times with federal grants. And what I found in Eastern New York, and this is important, were unseen and unrecognized ties between ancient shallow water rocks that you see on the east side of the Hudson and with the slates in the Taconic Hills. And I could recognize that about in excess of 500 million years ago, there were 4 to 5 million year alternations of sea level rise that are recorded in the shallow rocks. And those times of sea level rise extended all the way into Wisconsin. I could recognize them internationally. And these times of high sea level rise alternate with sea level fall. And what I could do using fossils was to really precisely correlate sea level rise with extremely low oxygen intervals in the tectonic muds, which means black shales, which meant high sea levels, low oxygen in the ocean, and other workers had been pointing out that these times of high sea levels are times of maximum temperature on Earth. This is something, an unrecognized relationship of sea level and global temperature, which I say in the future is going to be worse than carbon dioxide.
Time goes really fast on radio. So the IPCC recently said we had 12 years to take dramatic worldwide action to avoid catastrophic climate change. So I believe what you're talking about was this issue of global hyperwarming impact. How does that impact upon the time assessment that the IPCC says we got left to deal with?
Well, okay, you know, something like this, what I'm saying then is that as Antarctica melts, mountain glaciers melt, and we have melting of all ice on land, sea level is rising. And we know that at present. And what is going to happen as sea level rises is that you got to think of something kind of complex. There's something called albedo, which is reflectance of heat and light from space. And you have insulation. Cover continents with shallow seawater. That shallow seawater heats up, and it makes the world a lot warmer. And that's what we're facing probably within the next 1,000 years. So we're going to complement atmospheric carbon dioxide rise with a heating effect of rising sea levels. This will accelerate what we call global warming.
Is that what you also call global hyperwarming?
I call it hyperwarming because, you know, we talk of the greenhouse environment, and the greenhouse environment is specifically related to, for a generation, to increases in carbon dioxide and other gases like this, greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. What I'm talking about with global hyperwarming is the effect of sea level rise that's taking place right now. And I would say, given some work that they've done in the Arctic with an ice-free Arctic, a third of our climate temperature rise now is due to an ice-free Arctic, due to the heat building up on Earth there. And let heat build up on Earth across all the continents. We're going to accelerate global warming.
So how are you going about... Did I jump ahead? Was your question?
No.
So how are you going about developing the proposal of global hyperwarming, and how do you expect your findings will impact on what we need to do to deal with climate change?
Okay, you know, you go from, in science, from speculation. You observe something, you try to explain it. When you see the same thing happening over and over, you give an explanation, which is called a hypothesis. In science, there's a way to also to test that hypothesis, which is by quantitative models. And I believe I have found someone who's going to work a computer-based model of what happens when you have global sea level rise on a simulated Earth as that water goes across continents. That would be a first test of what happens.
And how do your findings impact on what we need to do with climate change?
Well, I think that what we really have to do is say that here's another effect that is going to take place. But the key thing I think that people have to do is be able to talk about climate change scientifically. What is the evidence? I think we have to say that it isn't a matter of belief. Very frequently they'll say, "Do you believe in climate change?" And I would end up saying, "No, I don't believe in climate change. The evidence is there." Scientifically, belief is good for politics. It's good for religion, and those are respectable ways of thought. And science, this deductive approach, is something that we also have to respect. And I think we've got to understand climate change is taking place, and maybe what we can do, but the key thing is to understand and also be able to talk, you know, with some sense of education about it.
So believe it or not, Dr. Landon, we're out of time.
Oh.
If people want to find out more about your write-ins, where can they go and follow you and into this a little bit more?
Yeah, you can Google my name on You'll find Hyperwarming there, a link to this early paper of 2012. There's a 2018 paper. And another thing to do is there's a thing called ResearchGate. You can get on Google. You go to ResearchGate, Ed Landing, and you'll be able to read everything that I've written, including an awful lot of stuff on Eastern New York. Hope you find it interesting.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.